Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, December 3rd, 2010, going right into the show. Sorry about last week, the Thanksgiving show. I was in a situation where I couldn't get to the microphone in time. And so, but something did happen last week. I did a show with John Rappaport. John Rappaport has a show weekly, and I was a guest on that. That was a one-hour show. So at any rate, I'm going to try and post that because it was a very good show. I talked about, John wanted me to talk about Tesla and the real history behind Tesla and then work it into weather and the cover-up, basically, of science today. And this is a real problem. It's an ongoing problem because let's look at weather. Weather is very electrical. We see tornadoes with electricity all around them. We see thunderstorms. We see volcanoes with electricity coming out. There are conferences that are starting up in the main science industry, but they're talking about the lightning shooting out of thunderstorms all the way out into outer space now. So it's very bizarre that they, you know, consider that the movement, somehow the movement, this magical air current movement within a cloud of thundercloud can do all this amazing, generate all this amazing energy, X-rays above the storm, tremendous mega amp currents, electrical currents down below to the earth, shooting out in all directions and up and down, and this movement of gas in the cloud is supposedly the source. Well, that's sure an amazing concept, but it just doesn't work because a battery, if it had that much power, would simply discharge internally. There's nothing from stopping electrical discharges within clouds. We see this all the time. So why would a cloud shoot out electrically into outer space? It contradicts every concept that even standard science believes in, that things cannot be electrically charged in space or in even environment. So how can something that can't be charged start shooting electricity out in all directions? The absurdity is just beyond absurd. So at any rate, a friend of mine just emailed this past week. We had a somewhat of an email exchange, and he had seen on the History Channel a weather explanation where clouds generate electricity and it goes shooting out in all directions. And this was like the modern version of science. So they had a nice animated, and I always love this, the science animation. Well, it looks very good on paper. It looks very good on the History Channel. It's, you know, you've got Disney quality animations, so one would suspect that the science behind it is equally good and up to date. But in reality, yeah, it's just ridiculous. They just show the positive charge up here and the negative charge here, and the electricity starts zapping out all over, and it looks good on paper. So, but in reality, standard science is once again in the cave ages. But on the John Rappaport show, I've talked about this many times in my show, the fact that if standard science were allowed to talk about this, and it's not like everybody's running around being told not to say things, this turns out to be the tier two scientists. Scientists who never question, never ask a question, never can. They're not good scientists because it would be immediately obvious to any good scientist that none of these stupid theories make any sense. Or that, for example, the dirty snowball, that comets could not possibly be dirty snowballs. Why? Because they are all of the properties that comets have, all the electrical properties that comets have, all of the discharge properties that comets have. The fact that you get to a comet and look at its nucleus and it's a hot, dry rock with nothing coming off of it.
And that's just in the case of the recent flyby of Comet Hartley, there was some carbon dioxide coming off and some cyanide gas. How do you get water out of that? And the beautiful water tail, evident from a distance around this comet nucleus, but when you get down to the nucleus, there's no water on the nucleus. There's no water coming off the nucleus. And simply, as I said, carbon dioxide, in this case, and then other forms of gases, cyanide gas, that's not water. And how do you get this amazing water tail then? Well, at any rate, they said they did detect a little bit of ice around Comet Hartley, but they were balls up to the size of basketballs. Well, how does that work? Once again, it's this mysterious hidden water source that nobody seems to be able to really find. That they tunnel down into the nucleus of Comet Temple 1, and there was no water, it was just dust coming out. So at any rate, I'm going to try and post that show on my page. Excuse me, John gave me the rights to that. To post the show on my page. And it was a very good interview, and I'm sure I'll be on John's show again in the future. So at any rate, and then the next night, Thanksgiving evening, I was just, like I say, unable to get to the microphone. And because I was basically in traffic, you might say. But anyway, sorry about missing that show. I did want to talk last week, though, Thanksgiving. Amazingly enough, in the House Senate bill, S-510, was being passed by almost an unspeakable majority, 75-25 it finally passed, giving the rights to the TSA, the Transportation Safety Administration, mind you, which now covers everything because of 911 and Homeland Security, now is in charge of gardening. Whoa, excuse me, how does that work? How do you get transportation security or safety? And, of course, this is called the food, this bill in Congress, which now has passed, S-510, the Food Safety Modernization Act. And, of course, there have been some recent incidents of salmonella. There have been some recent incidents of food poisoning where people actually died. But this follows the same cycle. Create a scare and then actually produce some kind of a situation where people die and the government has to step in. And for your safety now, this is for your safety, remember. For the children, for everybody's safety. We can't have this food coming in. Well, it's what's ridiculous is most of the vegetables are grown in Mexico with human waste as fertilizer, and there are no standards at all. The Mexican workers are in the field picking the crops while the planes are flying over spraying chemicals on the food and on the people that are working. The conditions there are deplorable. So, how could you have in this country this big, scared, big demand on control of gardening when, in fact, the international controls are nil? They're just not there. And so, anyway, the situation is just very strange, very strange. That's all I can tell you. But the implication is that, and I've called around to some of the seed houses to see how that affects them, and they just don't want to talk about it. It's like they're still researching it. Well, don't you think they would have researched this before? If their entire business depended on seeds and you growing a garden at home, and they'd probably be up on top of what this is all about. But anyway, I still haven't figured that out, but you can't get a straight answer out of them, out of the seed houses. So at any rate, the bottom line is, in the future, it looks like controlled gardening or controlled food going to the grocery stores is going to be a big part of this, or the growing food going to your table And I can just only imagine that sometime in the near future we're going to have some kind of event where somebody grows a garden at home, eats it, and is poisoned, and, oh, we just can't have these people having these home gardens anymore. It's just too dangerous. We have to control this from the government, and the only place you can buy food now would be from the secure and safe government supply of food. Wow. Anyway, you can see where this is headed, everybody. And so that's why, you know, that's another reason why I still keep posting the Mountain House freeze-dried food. It's just, it's non-GMO, it's organically grown food, freeze-dried. And this is different than there are many types of food processing to preserve food. It is different from dehydrated food. Freeze-dried is the best process for preserving food, actually developed by the Incas. The Incas used to set their vegetables and potatoes and other types of crops out to dry. And in the cold altitudes of the Andes. And this was a way to preserve food. And they really didn't know it, but they were freeze-drying their food. And this is what kept them alive for many, many, many hundreds of years, where other civilizations came and went. The Incas were able to manage because they developed this technique of preserving their food, which really turned out to be freeze-drying. But at any rate, that's just an offshoot of the type of things that have gone on throughout history and that are very important. So I just quick mention, because I very much believe in freeze-dried food, that I have a sale on, and this is kind of high-end. I typically don't have things this expensive on my page, but when you're looking at food for the next year or two and putting it up and saving it, then you really have to understand, yeah, it costs some money, but you're not going to be going to the store. And I recommend that people start using their, I don't call it survival food, I call it food for today. So people should start using their freeze-dried food as soon as they get it. But at any rate, I have a sale on. It's not really a sale. You just get something for free if you buy over $800 worth of any of my products. That's any combination of products on the webpage. Over $800 total purchase, you get a free mini Dalton water filter. If you buy over $1,600, then it's a free plastic HDPE high-density polyethylene Dalton water filter, the same kind that I sell on the webpage. It's the exact same product. Or in the case of over $2,400 purchase, then you get a free stainless steel Dalton water filter, and that comes with all the filter elements and everything, just like as if you purchased it on my webpage. You get that for free. Once again, you get the free mini with over $800 purchase. This is all described on my webpage. Free plastic water filter with over $1,600 purchase, and a free stainless steel water filter with over $2,400 purchase. And people are doing this. It's just, and I recommend too, even if right now we've got plenty of time to get you these products, and of course they can ship to any place in the world, you can order and have them shipped to any place. A lot of people are doing that. Some foreign countries won't allow food, so please check with customs before you make your order to make sure they'll allow that food to be shipped to your country. But some countries don't, so make sure that you know whether food can be shipped to your country or not. So at any rate, enough of that. So let me talk about... here's an announcement. My show also airs on Reality Radio Network, and the 2 hours after the live show on Thursday night. But Steve over there has been running. I was one of his very first shows on his network, and he's had many hosts come and go over the years, and I was still with Steve, still am with Steve right now. You can listen to my show. But As of December 31st, Steve is pulling the plug. He called me up and we talked, and he said, yeah, it just, I'm his only host right now, and it costs him a lot. Plus, he's like everybody. We're just trying to survive out here. But Steve is not going to have his network, Reality Radio Network. It's going to go away December 31st, 2010. And that will, of course, all remain WWCR. Hopefully that will be my mainstay. You can hear the streaming on WWCR. Also, of course, the frequency 5 point, is it 755? Look on my webpage, the Friday night and Saturday morning airing of the show. And I'm hoping to expand over the coming year. I'm not sure how yet, but as it is a very popular show, a lot of people listen to it. It has a wide range of audience, everybody from kids to grandmas and grandpas and everybody in between, truck drivers, PhDs in physics and chemistry and every other type of advanced education. People listen to this show. So there's a wide audience, and
so I'll, you know, I want to keep this show and hopefully expand on it, but that will be coming hopefully in 2011 with some other expanded coverage. At any rate, okay, well, on to tonight's topic. The Nobel Prize in Physics was given out. The announcement was presented October 5th of this year. And I was waiting to see some of the reaction and actually put this into perspective. But the prize in physics was given for a very interesting thing. And I'll first describe how this started. A scientist, and these were Russian scientists, they started with a piece of scotch tape, is the way this goes. And they just drew, as you can do, try this sometime, take a piece of scotch tape, take a lead pencil, which is basically carbon, take a lead pencil, this is a contradiction, it sounds like, but instead of having lead in your pencil, you have carbon. So you can write with the carbon. It's a black material. And use a piece of carbon in place of the lead in your lead pencil. Okay. Now, start shaving off layers off of this deposition of carbon until you have gotten down to one layer of carbon, one atom layer thick, and they say this is about 20 nanometers. So they call this nanotechnology. But at any rate, they started to measure the properties of carbon. It wasn't quite conductive as a metal, and so it landed in the range of semiconductors. Well, of course, as soon as the scientists saw these properties, the light went on, and immediately they believed that they could develop transistors using this technology. So in other words, carbon at a single layer deposition, a flat sheet of carbon, one atomic layer thick, had very interesting properties. It was a very good conductor. It was not an insulator. And carbon is used for many purposes. It's used for the leads on electric motors and generators. Oh, what else? The old-fashioned generators that you used in cars used to have a carbon tip. That was very interesting. And that's what, and the rotors. It's hard to explain if you had not seen those. I don't think they make them that way anymore. But you had to replace those every now and then. But the point is that carbon by itself in bulk is a conductor, and not too bad a conductor. Not as good as a metal, but it's a soft material. So that allowed the metal to maintain in the rotor of the electrical generator on a car. And the carbon would wear away over time, and then you'd have to replace it. But that gave you the contact in the generator system. At any rate, these scientists then went about getting down to a single atomic layer, which by itself was quite a feat. So that was almost worthy of a Nobel Prize by itself. But then to start to discover fundamental properties of single layer carbon, that resemble transistors and allowing you to build a micro transistor on an atomic scale. Now you can start to see the absolute benefit. When I was a student in university level, we, just to give you an idea of how long ago this was, we used tubes, electrical tubes, and they were the tubes, tube electronics, the old radio tube electronics, still used in high power applications. But in home radios and televisions, etc., the tube, just as a dinosaur, it went the way of the dinosaur. You don't see them anymore. Some very high quality sound systems still have them, but some people prefer tube systems, but you don't really see them anymore. But anyway, the point is that they transitioned to transistors, and when I first started out with transistors in college, they were a little teeny can. They looked like, you call them a can, but basically a little teeny aluminum metal can. And it had the silicon or germanium crystal in there. And these were built up, and that was a transistor. So the original computers had boards and resistors and capacitors and inductors, and they were built up in boards, little boards that would slide into a computer. And those were the original Cray and the original CDC and IBM supercomputers, and regular computers were built this way. The memories were built that way. The solid-state memory was a very expensive way to go, and it really wasn't used. You had tape memory. You had, and now everything is down to the very small level, so you can have a hard drive, for example, with a terabyte of information on it. Tremendous concentration. But now, okay, this is a quantum leap into the future. And therefore, the scientists working on these projects, where they have isolated down to the layer the properties of single layer and single atomic carbon. Now, in chemistry, the prize in chemistry was given for also study of the carbon atom, but measurement techniques allowing scientists to measure single carbon atom properties or single layer carbon. And so a carbon is a very important molecule, and it just happens to be one of the most important molecules or atoms in the human body. For example, carbon dioxide, carbon is a basic form of all life. It's the basis of all life as we know it on Earth. And so the basic components of life here are hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and carbon. They make up the four atoms that provide the nucleotides that form the basis for DNA. The atoms, the molecules, the long string helical molecules that form the basis of life on Earth. And as I talk about in my book, The Diamond Principle, probably for the entire universe. So at least there might be other forms of life out there, but for sure we're going to go into outer space someday and we're going to see other forms of life, possibly. But the vast majority probably will be based on carbon. There's a few variations on carbon, but carbon-12 is what we see on Earth. It's the most stable form. Carbon-14 coming from radioactive decay. But sometimes in outer space you find more variations of carbon. But here down on Earth, planet Earth, we're dealing with the base form of carbon, carbon-12. But at any rate, be that as it may, the study of the carbon atom is amazing progress in science. So in past years, I very much criticized the Nobel Prize because it was extremely political. They gave it quite a few years for work related to the Big Bang. And the Big Bang is something that has never been measured or directly observed, and of course it would be impossible to observe it directly.
because if it was the beginning of the universe, then there was nobody around to measure it. So a lot of science and a lot of theorizing has gone around the concept of the Big Bang, but it's an unprovable concept. So to give a Nobel Prize for that kind of work, to me, was very political. And it was very much influenced by world banking. To understand that connection, you have to be very familiar with my show and the discussions I have or the work that I do, the books that I've written. And the reason it's related to banking is because there is a huge control of Tier 2 science, the garbage science that presented to the public. Why is it important? Because it can give you the illusion that the universe started long ago and nothing has happened since. So at any rate, very important for the controllers to keep this concept of electricity away from the public, because, and as I was talking about earlier in the show, when the standard science or Tier 2 scientists meet at international meetings, they're still talking about thunderclouds shooting electricity up and down in all directions, and this is an absurd science. But what is the very next question that would be asked of any rational person from third grade up to PhD level if it were understood that comets were not dirty snowballs, that they were the discharge of a solar electrical capacitor? What if it was known that that electricity did not come out of clouds, but it came from outer space and it came down to the cloud, passed through the cloud to the ground? Well, gee, the very first thing that anybody would say is, why don't we grab some of that? Why don't we get a hold of some of that? Then the next question that would come up was, well, gee, somebody was doing that. His name was Tesla. Nikola Tesla did this around the beginning of the 1900s, and they went out and tore down his towers. They tore down the Tesla towers that he had built to gather electricity and then put up a phony story that he was going to transmit electricity with his tower. There's a recent movie about this. Tesla is included in it, and it's very important for them to expand on this idea that somehow the tower was used to transmit electricity, and it's so ridiculous because where did Tesla supposedly get the power to transmit? He had sold his generator technology to Westinghouse. Westinghouse wasn't going to give him low cut rate power and let him distribute it with his tower when they had purchased the grid network with wires to distribute power. So it just doesn't make any sense, but like all the standard stories in science, they don't make any sense at all when you really analyze them. But you have fleets and fleets of PhDs and meteorologists out there repeating this. John asked me when I was on the show last week, John Rappaport asked me, he said, how do you explain meteorologists? How come none of them seem to catch on to this idea or ever ask the idea that electricity doesn't come from clouds or there's a contribution from outer space? How come none of them ever ask this? And I said, well, what is it? What do you do when you want to become a meteorologist? Well, gee, you go through college, and then you go to meteorology school. Well, what do you have to do in meteorology school to become a meteorologist? Well, you got to get A's. You got to get good grades, right? Well, how do you get good grades? You repeat what the guy tells you, the professor. He supposedly knows everything. You've got a textbook. How do you get an A? On the test, you repeat what's in the textbook, and you get an A. If you come in and write down, all this is garbage, none of this makes sense, McCanny's work on electrical nature of the solar system is right, and electricity comes from outer space, you know what's going to happen? You're not going to become a meteorologist. You're going to flunk out because you didn't pass the test. You didn't repeat what they told you, so you're not going to become a meteorologist. It's that simple. So you have fleets and fleets of meteorologists, all of whom repeat the same thing, but none of whom really ever question or know how to question. They're not taught to question. They're taught to be a repeater. That's how you're rewarded. That's the Pavlov dog of science. Repeat what you're said and what you're told, and you will be rewarded. Think, and you will not be rewarded. Think and come up with real answers, you will really not be rewarded. You won't get to where you want to go. Let's put it that way. So at any rate, the point here is that I was diverging from the concept of the Nobel Prize and the political prizes of past years. Why did they have to give a Nobel Prize for the Big Bang? Well, it solidifies it in people's minds. It solidifies it in their minds that there's something amazing going on out here, and that this is all true science. What happens when a Nobel Prize is given? Well, that kind of is the conclusion of that topic. It's like the Holy Grail. That proves conclusively that that concept is true, to get a Nobel Prize for a concept. So it kind of puts the glue, the cement around it, and stabilizes it pretty much forever. So that's what happens with a Nobel Prize. So it was very political past years, dealing with the Big Bang and other concepts related to that. So I'm not going to dwell on that much longer. I did a couple shows on that at the time. But this year is different. This year is a real physics, a real chemistry prize dealing with real science that has real meaning and that has real applications. Now, what does this mean? Well, you can lay a layer of carbon, a single layer of carbon, down on a sheet of paper, a piece of plastic, and it can bend. It's highly flexible. So they showed examples of, for example, a watch, which was a folded up piece of plastic, and you wrapped it around your wrist and it was a watch, and it also, you could do some computer things, and you could also use it as a phone. And so it would be many devices in one. But you could take this watch off and unfold it and lay it down on a table, and it would become a computer screen, complete with memory, complete with everything you would have in your laptop computer. It could be a touch screen where you would touch it with a little pen, and instead of a mouse, you would use this pen, and that would be your cursor. You could touch things, and you could select a window or move things. So at any rate, all this technology is based on the idea that that carbon can be placed in a single layer. It can have transistor-like properties. Then all of the things that we have today, the memories, the computers, the digital world, can be brought down to the atomic level much faster, much lower power. This just gives a tremendous quantum leap in technology. So you could watch a movie on a screen that rolls up and basically into the size of a pen. I saw a product, it was about a year ago, and all of these appear at technology shows. You have a pen, and it's actually a projector also. Complete computer inside the pen, and it projected basically a keyboard and a screen onto any surface. And the keyboard, you would type like you would regularly type, and that would read the keys just like you'd type ABC on a keyboard on a computer. Well, it was just a projection of a keyboard, and you would touch it like you would touch anything, like the keyboard on a computer, and then the screen was the screen of the computer. And this was in a pen you put in your pocket. You'd set it up on a little teeny stand, and it would project the screen of the computer and the keyboard of the computer and the mouse. It was all there. So now these kind of technologies, and they figure that the single-layer carbon technology will become available for commercial use. They figure it will be, first commercial use will be in cell phones by the year 2012. Samsung has a whole technology center which is now taking this and putting it into commercial applications, and of course testing reliability, just truly amazing. So, this year's Nobel Prize, a very, very important contribution to the world of science. I'm truly amazed myself in physics. And of course, this has been something people have been looking for a very long time. The single atomic carbon or whatever material. A lot of people were using traditional silicone transistors and trying to miniaturize them. Now there's another thing, and I know people have been working on this in the world of batteries. Now that they can get down to the miniature atomic level with batteries or with atoms of carbon, next you might see great improvements in battery size. In other words, batteries could become very much smaller. The efficiency of batteries, right now solid-state batteries are in use. You basically, because basically a transistor is just like a capacitor. It holds charge at a distance. It's not a complete conductor. And the ability to hold that charge allows you to hold the state of the transistor, like in the state of a 1 or a 0. And so that can be maintained for a long time as long as you keep power applied to that transistor. So at any rate, it's another way of storing power, of storing electricity. So this may be an open door also for miniaturizing batteries. And so if you can miniaturize the transistor and the amount of power it takes, then the battery doesn't have to be so large, and so the whole world of electronics becomes smaller. Your 9-pound laptop now just got reduced to maybe an ounce of plastic that can roll up into a tube or fold up into a strip that you can wrap around your wrist like a watch. But along with this technology, of course, there's some problems. You can inject this into small chips that can be shot into a person with a needle, with a when you get a shot. So along come microchips, and it's something that I've criticized science all along. Okay, these scientists made a great discovery. They discovered something that can be used for the benefit of man, but no sooner is this out of the chute until it is being used for other more nefarious uses and to control the public. And most science, I've always said, people talk about nuclear bombs, or some people believe you should have like submachine guns in your house. Some countries do that. Every house has a machine gun. They don't have any crime in those countries. But at any rate, the point is that any weapon can be used for damage. A kitchen knife in your kitchen could be used, and every household has knives. But it could be used to kill somebody, too. So it's not the object, it's the person holding the object that is the problem or the cause of damage. And that's where the whole issue of gun control, etc., that's where that gets to be a bit fuzzy, because if the people are trained and on how to use these. We just had another shooting incident with a high school student. Where was that, in Michigan? But the same typical thing. An average kid walks into a room with a bunch of hardware, handguns, etc., and starts shooting a place up. Once again, very much this could be one of those controlled situations where that person was under mind control and maybe got snapped up by the mind control experts in maybe the government or these other nefarious groups that can control the mind of a youngster, and he was captured somehow online, maybe on a chat session or whatever. And that's why a lot of this can be very dangerous. But then they point and say, oh, look at what this kid did. Well, nobody has ever done a study of this overall phenomenon where all of a sudden kids are bringing guns into school. This didn't happen when there were muskets and muzzle-loading rifles back in the old days. This type of thing did not happen. So why is this happening now? They just have modern weapons. Well, that's what's so different about that? It's something mental that's going on. It doesn't have anything to do with the type of weapons that are available. People had knives. People had swords before. People had all kinds of weapons available before, but they didn't use them. They didn't. Kids didn't go into classrooms and start shooting up the classroom. So at any rate, something mental is going on here. And at any rate, I don't want to diverge into that. But the point is, with the technology that was developed for carbon, for single layer carbon atom technology called graphene, by the way. Graphene is the name they have applied to this this technology. It is not the technology, it's what people do with it. So you can take micro technology or nanotechnology, improve, you can do all kinds of things. You could imagine, say, a heart operation. When the surgeon gets done, he puts a microchip in the heart and can easily monitor all the valves and all the workings, and if something starts to go wrong, it's immediately transferred, and that information is transferred to a medical center. You can imagine all kinds of situations. Or imagine a person that has, this is very common, youth have accidents where they'll snap a vertebrae and it affects the nerve, so they're paralyzed from that point down. So imagine a way to transmit that nerve data from the top of the nerve through the broken nerve and down to the bottom part, and people could all of a sudden, within a few hours in some therapy, they could start functioning again. Well, these would be great benefits to mankind. This would be to the people that got hurt. Not that you want to go out and get hurt intentionally, but to the people who have been paralyzed, this would be a great advantage, a tremendous improvement in their life, and they could get back to normal. But at any rate, the point is that this technology can be used for good, but it also could be used to inject into people, unbeknownst to them, while they get a government-controlled shot. Or it could be in the food you eat. Just imagine you buy lettuce at the store, and it's got a chip. One of the things that this technology is being called for, and there are actually manufacturing plants in Russia right now that are producing vast amounts of microchips that are intelligent microchips. And the point is that, of course, once again, this is being done for your safety. It could be put in food. It could be put in bottles of drugs. It could be to make sure that you're getting the right product. And they're saying 30% of all drugs today are fake and not the real drug manufactured by the original manufacturer. So you have all of these so-called safety issues. But the point is that with this carbon technology, you could put a microchip on every product. Walmart already does this, and other stores are following suit, because you can track a product all the way from the manufacturer into your house where you're using it. It could give information back to the manufacturer. This is how many times they used our product. You could get statistics, or you could do something more nefarious. And you could start studying people. You could start studying people and what they do, and start taking data on individuals. And this is something that is a danger in the future. And just think how available this would be when a company could make hundreds of millions of chips. Everything you eat, everything you buy, everything you use would have a microchip in it that could transmit data about you. It could take your pulse. It could take your temperature. It could put a time-delayed chemical into your body. Just think of all of the nefarious things that could happen if you had this technology available. Do you trust the government? I don't know anybody that trusts the government. Would you trust them to put this type of you know, a chip in everything. It could be in your licenses. It could be in the first day in school. Your kids are told they have to get shots, and all of a sudden, everybody is all the kids are being tracked all the way through school. By the time they graduate, studies being done, what students ate and who's what student does better in school, and on and on and on. And this eventually could be sold for your safety. All for your safety and well-being, controlled by the government. So, once again, it's not the technology. It's a wonderful technology, but it allows a lot of control. Can you imagine somebody like Julius Caesar or somebody way back in history, or even Hitler, didn't have this kind of Mussolini or Stalin or Lenin? Those guys would have loved to have this kind of technology at their disposal, to have a read on what everybody out there is thinking. And if you say something against the government, that information would be immediately transmitted to receiving stations, and you would be singled out to be re-educated, taken to a re-education camp or whatever. So, yeah, the uses of this technology could be for good, or it could be used for the control of the public. But be that as it may, just on the beginning of this, it's a great scientific advancement. Going through the list of Nobel Prizes, some years they're kind of, what would you say? They're kind of abstract for the public. But this technology, excuse me, this technology is very applicable immediately, and it's being applied already. A lot of people are diving in head first, especially big companies, to take hold of this technology because it's the way of the future. Companies that don't dive into this technology will be lost in the dust, literally, because they did not move in time, and all the other companies are miniaturizing, making things faster, cheaper, better, more user-friendly, and as far as computer, telephone products, etc. So all of this is heading in one particular direction, and that is it's a technology that is very important to mankind, whether it's used for good or bad. And so therefore, that's why the Nobel Committee recognized this as a tremendous addition, a tremendous boon to mankind. I agree. I 100% agree. I just fear that the scientists, once again, let me analyze this from the scientist's point of view. These scientists work in a university. They're paid by the university. They get the Nobel Prize, but there might be patents involved where they're benefactors, but I can guarantee you that the university, the government grants, and probably by now a lot of companies have purchased rights or done additional work and could overtake any patents that these scientists have. So the question is, okay, a scientist makes a great discovery, publishes it, gets the information out there, it becomes verified all over the world, double, triple verified, something that's very important in science. It's important to have science verified by independent third parties. This has been done with this technology. Other companies are using it, making actual products. So it's very well known that this is real. This is not some pie-in-the-sky development. And in fact, in one of the YouTube videos that I saw, one of the narrators was talking about this, how a lot of the trade shows, every now and then, and probably every trade show, some phonies show up making some kind of claim, and it turns out to be false. Well, they don't last long, because the real companies, the real scientists get out there and shake it out very quickly, the phony stuff. And just a comment, you might say, well, why doesn't that happen in space science? Well, because government has pretty much a corner on space science. It's all of space science is governed from the top down. Some space work is being done by individual companies, but they're still very much toe-to-toe in line with government programs and with government science and government objectives. Just as an example, the use of chemical rockets to get private ventures into space is still the only known way to go. There are other ways to get things into outer space, naming specifically electromagnetic propulsion systems. But the point is the science is not owned by the scientist. The scientist cannot say, okay, I invented this, I came up with this technology, I do not want it to be used for injecting microchips into food that is then consumed by humans and that then is used to track human beings and can be used by governments for nefarious use in controlling human beings. I don't want my technology to be used that way. And that's simply not the case. These scientists have absolutely no control over the technology that they developed. So in a sense, it's kind of like the Frankenstein story, in which a scientist develops a Superman in the sense of Frankenstein and Dr. Frankenstein, and this monster breaks out and goes and ravages the town. You know, it's the and then the people, of course, turn on the scientist. Well, in this case, the scientist has no responsibility because it's taken away from him. He doesn't own the technology or what it can be used for. And this is a major problem in science today. 99.999999999% of all scientists in some way, shape, or form get their funding or support from the government. So at any rate, all I can tell you is that these scientists don't control the technology that they developed. If they're good people, if they're bad people, if they have good intentions, if they even think about this, it doesn't matter because the technology is taken away from them and is being used and controlled by other entities. So that's why I personally have never worked with government funding, don't want government funding, and I've held back on some of my own inventions because it would be soon taken over and used for basically purposes of controlling the public. Bad uses could be used for warfare, could be used for other methods of controlling the public. So at any rate, okay, well, so that's basically a summary now of the 2010 Nobel Prize in Physics given for the material graphene single-layer carbon deposits on a various types of material, typically a cellophane type of material, plastic, clear plastic, and then with amazing properties that allow it to act like a transistor, like a conductor, and allow it to be used. It's flexible. Many amazing properties that this material then would allow advancements in science and technology that revolutionize the world, and it truly is. So hats off to these Russian scientists who did this work, but no hats off to the process of science, where science is owned, it's controlled, and the scientist who invented it has no ability to control the science that he has developed. Imagine the rocket scientists in Germany developing tremendous liquid rocket technology, but not having the control that rocket technology eventually being used for intercontinental ballistic missiles, of which the United States and Russia still have tons of them. Most people don't realize that they are being dismantled at somewhat of a slow rate, and that nuclear material that was developed throughout the Cold War era, that material is being used in nuclear reactors to power our countries. So isn't that an odd situation? But there's still lots of it out there, still lots of ICBMs and still very much a chance that it could get into the wrong hands through international means and trading or people wishing to take over countries or watch a country like the United States go under. That's always a possibility. Or it could be put in the hands of our own government officials who want to further control the public with, say, 911 false flag type operations. So, yeah, it's a very dangerous world when science comes along with new technologies, but as soon, always 100% of the time, as soon as these technologies become available, they also become used for warfare, the use of for malintent, you might say. And then it's preached to the public that this is good. One thing I always mention to people is that these are public announcements, so people in all countries have availability of this this technology. Okay, well, that's I'm going to switch topics here just for the last minute or so of the show. Just want to mention that the webpage, the sales are still there. I don't really believe in sales because I have a pretty good pricing on all my products that I sell, the water filters, the books, and the new book is priced really low to sell, the Diamond Principle. It's become a very popular book. All I'm going to say is that the webpage, let me give you the webpage, and I'll give the mail order address also in a second, so grab a pencil if you'd like to order by mail order. The food, I'd rather you order online. It's just much more convenient for our side because of the higher prices involved. But at any rate, the webpage, www.jm as in Mary, CC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo, seven letters. It's the full webpage is jmcanniescience.com. But the abbreviated URL is very simple, seven letters, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com, JMCCSCI.com. And then the mail order address, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. And the thing I would suggest for Christmas, if you're ordering, it's a little late for mail order, but we'll try and get things out as soon as possible. Once again, mail order JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. And what I'd suggest is the water filters, the $289 for the stainless steel Dalton water filter, $199 for the plastic Dalton water filter. It comes with five filter elements. And I'm out of time. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.